Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is Chicago Tribune columnist John Cast.
Good morning, everybody.
Hello. Okay. John, great to have you as always. I wanted to start out with the jury statistics from the weekend because for some reason it only happens once a quarter with the Chicago Press Corps that violence in Chicago is discussed. If you have something happen on, you know, Shootapalooza weekend, then everybody pays attention. But all that happened on that weekend that made international news was we concentrated the average number of murders and shootings that happen in a week in Chicago into 3 days. This weekend, latest stats I've seen, perhaps Mike Scott can update them, 50 shot, 4 dead this weekend.
And 23 shot since Saturday, I believe.
You had,
And that was covered in the Chicago Tribune.
That's
my
right.
My Chicago Tribune.
That's right. You had
a newspaper that actually covers stuff.
The Chicago Tribune reporting over the weekend, just in 14 hours between Friday afternoon and early Saturday morning, there were 25 people shot, including a 3-year-old boy who was among 7 wounded in a single attack. Also, too, to apprise people about parts of the city that we care about, there was a shooting near Seward Park, Division in Orleans, at a peace event. 3 people shot, because nothing is so dangerous in Chicago as a peace event.
Nothing like a peace picnic to take your sticks out.
John, you Division Orleans, that's getting very close to an area of the city we care about.
We care about all the city.
You know what I'm saying.
Some people only care about some parts of the city. There were also 2, I think on Friday night, beginning the weekend, 2 people were shot downtown, gut shot. Nothing like being gut shot on a Friday night when you've got Saturday to think about.
Sure, the air and water show.
One in a parking lot, there are 2 shot downtown. So it's getting dicey. And then there were protests over the weekend. A young boy, 15-year-old basketball player, was shot himself. And protesters are all screaming that it was... Right, Mike Scott, that protesters were screaming.
Yeah.
He was shot by police.
The 2 aunts and an attorney were outside 10th District yesterday making that claim.
And hundreds of people in the street. And we're not even in the Laquan McDonald days yet.
So Walter Williams had a piece in the Daily Wire over the weekend. He was still recounting what happened during Lollapalooza weekend, 12 and 74. 13, 14, whatever the numbers were. I mean, I hate to be so dismissive of the statistics, but we're just trying to give you order of scale. It's not that we're cavalier about individual lives. And Walter Williams has an Enough is Enough piece talking about violence. I mean, just in Chicago, more of the hand-wringing, but you've written about it. What's your perspective with respect to, you know, the stakeholders, the civilian political authority, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, that side of the criminal justice system, along with the police, and then the residents of the city?
Mayor Emanuel, interestingly enough, a few days ago took grief for saying that Chicago has lost, or some neighborhoods have lost, their moral core.
Mm-hmm.
What he doesn't want to talk about is that for the past 70 years, large cities have been ruled by Democrats, and they have, that party has proceeded to deconstruct just like they want to deconstruct the United States on the left, deconstruct all the institutions that kept people civil. So schools are really not that good. If you ask a public school teacher where she or he sends their children, chances are it won't be CPS.
About 50-50,
Police, Rahm gutted the police department in a response kind of also to the Laquan McDonald police shooting video, which would have cost him the election had it come out. And ever since then, he's been speaking in a tiny voice, asking people to, you know, find the better natures, better angels of their nature, and not to be so angry. That was, to me, Dan, the most revealing thing about this election coming up. He's scared, and he's scared about what's going to happen if the Laquan McDonald trial, the Jason Van Dyke trial that's coming up, doesn't go the way the oligarchs and the institutional Chicago want it to go.
Yeah, if he's not convicted.
If he's not convicted, what do you have? Ferguson? What's going to happen? Because when you get 150 people, 200 people out in front of the 10th District, as Mike Scott said, screaming, the cops shot this young man, when I don't see how that happened, but they're screaming it, you're going to see more.
Do you think Tiny Dancer's rhetoric about losing your moral core, as you described it, is sort of, I don't want to say a dog whistle, but sort of coded language to people on the lakefront, on the revenue-producing wards, mm-hmm. the upper middle-income families
tax-paying
around the city.
Wards, right?
Yeah, where to say, hey, you know what I'm talking about. There's nothing we can do about this. Because it's a corollary to what he had Eddie Johnson say. Violence is contained in 4 of the 22 police districts. We got it contained. We got it surrounded. Yeah. It's not coming for you. I got you. And you know there's nothing we can do about them. Is that what he's saying?
I think that's generally what the larger, institutional Chicago wants to say. And I think that's what people out in those revenue-producing wards want to hear.
Well, that's my point.
But the issue is when you get Seward Park, you get people getting shot at a peace march there on Division and Wells, and you get just a few weeks ago, we had people capping off on Lakeshore Drive and on the Gold Coast. Remember that old man, 85-year-old man, holding onto his Mercedes, getting carjacked?
Yeah, that's right.
Getting shot? That stuff, people don't forget that stuff. So it's embedded in their minds. When they start figuring out that there aren't enough squad cars, enough cars in the districts to handle these calls, and that he's put everybody he can in the areas you talked about, the high crime, high shooting areas, where those police officers are working 24/7, no days off, with guns in their hand, we'll see.
Has Kim Foxman leveled up for public scrutiny enough?
No, not at all.
I want to read an excerpt from a retired CPD, 33 years of service, investigative work, including Commander of Vice and Narcotics, Deputy Chief of Organized Crime, and so forth.
Is that Mike Hoke?
Mike Hoke.
Yeah, sure.
Known him
for a long time.
He writes, this was a Facebook post, and I guess a letter to the editor. I don't know if it got published. I believe that the police are doing all they can to prevent the violence, but I also believe that the rest of the criminal justice system in Cook County is failing the public. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle has publicly stated that way too many black males are incarcerated, and she has made it her mission to address her concerns. She's influenced State's Attorney Fox, Chief Judge Timothy Evans, and Sheriff Dart to adjust their policies to follow her beliefs. State's Attorney Fox has instructed the Felony Review Unit of her office to limit the number of felony charges brought against individuals who are arrested with a firearm within Cook County. The Chicago Police Department recovered more than 5,000 firearms in 18, but I doubt if even half of those arrested were charged with a felony. Chief Judge Evans has instructed the judges in bond court to release as many individuals as possible on recognizance bonds.
He got rid of the tough judges in bond court.
Makes no sense to me that an individual already on parole who has a previous bond forfeiture should be granted a recognizance bond. Yeah. Sheriff Dart is allowing individuals on parole or who have failed to appear in the past for a hearing to walk the streets on home monitoring. There have been credible reports of many of those released on home monitoring are not being tracked by his office, and he's failing to advise the public of the same. The remainder of the criminal justice system, not including the police, is failing the citizens. Are those fair criticisms?
Yes, I think so. Look, when you have the state's attorney running, remember, how did she win the election?
By not being Anita Alvarez.
And Anita Alvarez was hung out to dry by Rahm and David Axelrod.
On Laquan McDonald.
The moment that thing started breaking bad for Rahm, David Axelrod's on Twitter ripping into Anita Alvarez and tubing, you know, they're tubing her because they have to save Rahm. And now she...
And to stave off Tony Preckwinkle. Right.
Right.
To keep her at bay.
To give her something.
Yes.
Just like they're going to give... They'll give Ed Burke up to Chewy Garcia so he could, you know, Chewy can chew on his leg and maybe half of his ham, right, and get rid of him.
So more
years to come.
So Kim Fox and Tom Dart and Tim Evans, they haven't received the scrutiny, they haven't received the attention in this story that is warranted.
I like Tom Dart. And I didn't go after him as hard as I should have, and I should have. Kim Fox, I should have, and I didn't. So, yeah, I got to point at me as well as everyone else.
Step up your game, Cass.
Yeah.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J this morning and talking about Chicago violence over the weekend. Updating per Mike Scott, 53 shot, 6 dead this weekend. Steve N88 texting in, Chicago's new motto, valued lives matter.
Yeah. They always did.
Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, John Cash, Chicago Tribune columnist extraordinaire, and John.
Yes, I'm not Amy.
You're not Amy, that's correct. Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off, Jim Clapper, former director of national intelligence under one President Barack Obama. Apparently wants to keep a security clearance because as Brennan was doubling down on his accusing the president of treason this weekend on the Sunday talkies, Clapper was starting to separate himself from Brennan, likes to maybe still have access to, maybe doesn't want to be thrown in the camp with John Brennan on Rachel Maddow on the matter of essentially suggesting the President of the United States should be executed because if he committed treason, that's a capital crime.
I didn't mean that he committed treason, but it was a term that I used, nothing short of treasonous.
Well, you didn't mean that he committed treason, though.
I said it's nothing short of treasonous. That was the term that I used, yeah.
What does that mean, Dan? You're a lawyer? What does that mean, you weasel bureaucrat?
I don't know.
Here's something. If you read anything about John Brennan and how terrible Trump is and all the hand-wringing in the media. And I know because, you know, Dan's here on the radio and me in the newspapers. I'm a conservative floating on a sugar cookie in a sea of liberal milk, okay? And I see it crumbling every day. And if you read anything about that, Brennan, you didn't read about Richard Burr?
Yes.
Then
Senate
you were
Intel
just being
chairman.
Played for a fool.
Right. Brennan, though, just on Brennan and whether or not he's suggesting the president committed treason, walking that back in, he's, you know, seemed to give the yes and no answer to mm-hmm. Rachel Maddow, but he seemed to more clear with Chuck Todd even when pressed on it on Meet the Press.
Do you regret essentially accusing the president of treason? Do you regret some of the things you have said?
I called his behavior treasonous, which is to betray one's trust and to aid and abet the enemy, and I stand very much by that claim.
You are the former CIA director accusing the sitting president of the United States. It's not a private citizen. A lot of people hear the former CIA director accusing the sitting president of the United States of treason. That's That's a monumental accusation.
Well, I think these are abnormal times, and I think a lot of people have spoken out against what Mr. Trump has done, and maybe it's my warning training as an intelligence professional. I have seen the lights blinking red in terms of what Mr. Trump has done and is doing and is bringing this country down on the global stage, and he's fueling, feeding divisiveness within our country. He continually lies to the American people, and the types of things that he's doing, I think I need to speak out. And so I've been speaking out rather forcefully, because I believe it's important to do so. I don't believe I'm being political at all. I'm not a Republican. No, I'm not a Democrat. No. And many members of the Congress over the years who have security clearances have spoken out rather forcefully against whoever was in the Oval Office if they weren't from the same political party. So now as a private citizen, they're telling me that I shouldn't do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's okay. Keep talking because you're an American, and John Brennan's not yet the president of the United States or head of the secret police. So as long as you're not there in that job, John, you can keep talking. I can keep talking.
So I mean,
Dan can talk.
Well, and just on the issue again of security clearance. Now John Brennan is suggesting he's going to litigate the matter. I'm sorry. Everybody has made it clear, including John Brennan's erstwhile allies, what the truth is, which is it's the president's discretion. It's executive privilege with respect to the conference of security clearance. So, okay, go ahead and litigate it. Go ahead and keep talking. Go ahead and keep writing op-eds in the New York Times. Go ahead and litigate the matter of your security clearance. But when it comes to this issue of accusing the president of treason, is it clear that is what John Brennan said, that is what he believes, and that is what he is standing by? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. So I want to understand why he is sort of somehow entitled to security clearance.
Because if you have, look, they leave government service, they go work for lobbyists, they go to work for networks. That security clearance is their badge, of legitimacy.
That's how
they make their money. And a lot of these guys sell their access. That means they got a Rolodex or whatever it's called now. You know, hey, I could get so-and-so on the phone. Nothing different than Henry Kissinger calling China for Monsanto. I'm just making that up, but it's just that kind of thing.
Well, and don't forget, I mean, Brennan, it's not just selling your access so you could be a pundit. It's also in the space of consulting and defense contracting.
Yes, of course.
And Brennan had some time outside of government where he was paid north of $700,000 for his access, his time at CIA, his connections, his clearance, security clearance, one could argue, at least in part. And so this matters, but it's really interesting. So Jim Clapper on.
Wait,
with,
we're going to believe him? He stood up and lied to Congress.
Well, right.
Didn't he? He lied to Congress and got away with it. Now we're going to believe him on this.
Just as his colleague John Brennan did. Jim Clapper on with Jake Tapper as to Brennan's fiery rhetoric.
Do you think that John Brennan's hyperbole is an issue here? Is one of the reasons we're having this crisis?
Well, I think it is. I think, you know, John is sort of like a freight train, and he's going to say what's on his mind. I think, though, that the common denominator among all of us that have been speaking up, though, is genuine concern about the jeopardy or threats to our institutions and values. And although we may express that in different ways, and I think that's what this really is about. But John and his rhetoric has become, I think, an issue in and of itself.
What a concession.
Two things. Okay, first of all,
finally.
Shut up, not you.
Yeah.
The guy who lied to Congress. I don't, once you lie to Congress, you know, here's the thing. When I interview somebody for my column in the Chicago Tribune, and I'm talking to someone who, like, say, had lied under oath, the first thing I've got to ask him is, on the record, why would anyone believe you that you after you lied under oath? On TV, they never ask that question. Why? They don't want to piss off the guest?
No.
They don't want to anger the guest?
No, or context. That's one of the, as you know, being that sugar cookie that you are in the sea of liberal milk.
No, I'm floating on the sugar.
Floating on a sugar
Get
cookie.
Get self-promoting metaphors,
yeah,
which are not involving lampshakes, by the way.
Thank goodness.
I know you worried me over that.
But you know this. They never provide context on those that they are looking to elevate
exactly.
for the means of if, as conduits for those they want to take down. They'll never give you the uncomfortable backstory. Whether it's something
Omarosa, didn't you cheerlead for Trump? Choo choo train.
You see it all the time. You see it all the time in Chicago too.
Yeah.
If somebody goes after me, somebody goes after a conservative, then you that person is just given the kind of stylized version of who they are,
right?
Because they're serving a purpose for the reporter, Natasha Kareki, formerly of the AFL-CIO Times, now doing her same routine at Politico, did it this weekend.
She ripped on you this week?
Yeah, I mean, the same thing. You cast one person in the worst light possible or take something that you can make the most negative portrayal of them, and then the person you're using to report to right. give both sides, the attacker, is from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
And you never talk about the devil horns or the forked tongue or the tail that's, sticking out there. Listen, on the Brennan thing, if I may.
Yeah.
Richard Burr, the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman, and he's not like a total pro-Trump warrior.
No, he's not.
He's a very sober fellow, okay? Senator Burr's statement, Director Brennan's recent statements purport to know as fact that the Trump campaign colluded with a foreign power. If Director Brennan's statement is based on intelligence he received while still leading the CIA, why didn't he include it in the intelligence community assessment released in 2017? If his statement is based on intelligence he has seen since leaving office, it constitutes an intelligence breach. If he has some other personal knowledge or evidence of collusion, it should be disclosed to the special counsel, not the New York Times. And if Brennan's statement is purely political and based on conjecture, the president has full authority. Now, if you didn't read that in any punditry, in any of the punditry over the weekend, then what they're doing is treating you like a moron, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's right. And to your point about Richard Burr, number one, he's been a stalwart defender of the Mueller investigation,
yes.
being allowing it to proceed. And he's been very restrained in talking about anything that's come before Senate Intel, drawing any kind of conclusions about collusion or not collusion,
right.
other than to say in this same interview that he gave to AP that you were excerpting, no factual evidence today we've received, quote, no factual evidence today we've received on collusion or conspiracy between Russia and President Donald Trump's campaign. He's still open on the issue. He hasn't come to any final conclusions. Now, some of us have, but I'm just giving you Burr's perspective. So it's not, as you said, it's not like this guy is in the tank for Trump. You haven't seen him flack once for the Trump administration.
Never. And he's not as partisan as his co-chairman, the Democrat.
Devin Nunes.
Yeah.
Oh, in the Senate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, of course. No factual evidence today that we've received. So, I mean, if evidence is important to you in terms of proving up something like treasonous conduct, you hear it over and over again. And when the Adam Schiffs of the world are asked if they have any evidence, they either, they kind of not yet. It's called coming together. No one can produce anything. Right. And at some point, you got to produce or people move on. You either have a case or you don't. And you go ahead and you do whatever you need to do and interview whoever you need to interview and pursue whatever lead you want to pursue. That's what been the Republican position from the beginning with Mueller, or just with the allegations in general, even before Mueller. Go ahead. But you have to provide evidence at some point. To repeat for the umpteenth time, the only evidence of a crime we have so far is the unmasking of General Michael Flynn.
You do have collusion. You have Democrats and the FBI and other people in justice like Bruce Orr and others colluding with agents that are working with Russia on behalf of Hillary Clinton. And all you're seeing in the media is collusion, Trump. And I'm not saying the president of the United States is a genius. or even that I wanted him to be president. But it tells, it shows me why people don't trust us in the media, because of nonsense like this.
Because they shouldn't.
Constantly repeated.
Ben, I'm sorry, Ben in Milwaukee, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan and your guest.
John.
How the hell did Brennan get a security clearance, Dan, when he went ahead and on his resume, they would ask about, were you ever a member or associated with a Communist Party? And on his resume, this was years back, he put down yes, he's had affiliations.
Well,
now how the hell?
Yeah.
How the hell does he get a security clearance? I'd like to know about that.
Thanks for the call, Ben. He voted for Gus Hall for president in 1976, and then, so he was, you know, he was perhaps his first election. I don't know. He was
so
in early 20s.
Yeah, right.
But 76, he voted for Gus Hall, was a communist. I mean, so that's, you know, the height of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Just FYI. Now, he was in his 20s, so youth
probably
discretion.
Probably Reds with, who was that, with Warren Beatty.
Yeah, Warren Beatty.
I bet you he, like, had two boxes of popcorn.
I bet you he saw...
Like the New York Times, you know, that loved Stalin.
Yeah.
Remember?
I bet you, that's right. Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
Ooh,
30, 40 million people, kulaks starved to death. Murdered? Oh, what are you talking about?
New York Times on Hitler. He's an outdoorsman who loves dogs. I mean, honestly, I've read the excerpts on this show, but and this was in the 30s before he came to power. But nonetheless, he was that was during his ascent. I also bet you, just in terms of trying to one-up you on that, I bet you about John Brennan.
What about
him? I bet you he saw White Knights and he was rooting against Mikhail Baryshnikov and Gregory Hines. I bet you he saw Rocky IV and he was rooting for Drago.
What was he like on Little Nikita? Was he against the Little Nikita?
These are all good questions.
Right.
Should be put to John Brennan during a session of enhanced interrogation.
His favorite actress is probably Carrie Russell. What do you think?
Exactly.
Whoa.
Boy, very current, your reference. John in Wakanda.
Yeah, hi, boys. How you doing?
Hello.
I like the Rocky IV reference, by the way.
Thank you.
Taking Brennan's security clearance away not only shuts him off from the information stream, but now the other guys who have clearances can't talk to him. So if you take out certain people, they can't converse with each other. So
Right. That's a good point.
That causes they can't say, well, you know, a third party, give me some information. I can't have any. They can't do any of that now.
Thanks for the call, John.
Thanks, John.
Ken and Lombard.
Yanni.
Morning.
Morning.
I had a comment to make about John Brennan. I would hold him to the same standard of Reagan did, since these are his buddies, the communist Soviet Union, and the same standard that Reagan held the Russians to is trust but verify. So bring it on. I'm all ears. When you verify what you're saying, then I will trust you. Another comment I had, too, is I don't know if you happened to hear what former Admiral McCraven said, that John Brennan is a man of honor. And I can understand that people have a dislike for Trump, but to compromise your own personal integrity and make comments like that when it's been so brazen and in your face what this guy's done, I would really want to know, as from one former operator, albeit a different branch, to another operator, why would you compromise your integrity to make a point? This is what Trump does. He gets you going. He throws you off balance, and that's
exactly
the one thing you don't want to do, is succumb to that. And I'm telling you this, and I voted for the guy. It's just what he does. Now, somebody that's supposedly that smart and that experienced, why would they get taken in by that? That's my question. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Ken.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And in for Amy this morning is John Cash, Chicago Tribune columnist. And John, the black vote may not be determinative with respect to the midterms, but it certainly could be determinative with respect to Trump's reelection in 2020. And so the news out this week, into this weekend, of some polling of Trump's job number among black families in this country, job approval among black families in this country, is interesting. August 7th NAACP poll found that 21% of black registered voters approve of Trump's job performance. Last week, Wednesday, Rasmussen's tracking survey found 36% of black voters approve of President Trump's performance, compared to just 19% a year earlier. Now, 21 or 36, obviously that means a supermajority of black voters disapprove of his performance. However,
they need all.
Yeah, right. If the Democrats, I mean, approval does is not a one-to-one translation to vote, okay? Because right. There's other things that animate somebody's vote. The matchup matters. I may approve of the job he's doing, but I think that person X could do a better job, mm-hmm. So I'm going to go home. But 90, if Democrats aren't getting 90%, then they're not winning elections. And
Donkey Plantation.
I mean, look.
You need people, you know,
if Trump, in. If Trump got, I mean, he got 8% of the black vote.
It was huge.
In 2016. Mm-hmm. If he got double figures, then pick the socialist of your choice. They are a dead candidate walking politically.
Why? So let's see. So do you think the Democrats poll too? I think so. And if those polls are consistent with the Rasmussen poll and others, then is that why we're seeing so much talk about Omarosa? She's victims of racism, and you better get your black card or whatever nonsense that is if you're African-American and you happen to be
that's
a conservative.
Interesting. I mean, perhaps, but I mean, that'd be the card they're playing. They would play anyway. I mean, that's the only
but
card.
They're really playing it. But notice Omarosa's, in terms of what I read and see in the papers, Omarosa's bigger than Bruce Orr, right? A little bit.
Oh, well, there's no
just
question. Well, because the whole solidarity and marginality bigot baiting play is so much easier. It's more sensational, and people have a visceral response. So of course they're going to play that. There's no question. And even if it was still 95-5, they'd play it anyway because they need to motivate that segment of their constituency, both the media as well as the Democrat Party, you know, one connected to the other,
Democratic
to turn out a vote.
Complex.
Yeah, to turn out a vote. But the problem they have, so that's a problem they have, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, this is interesting, CBS pollster Anthony Salvanto, who is one of the few on election night to see that this was it was going to be a long night, that it was going to be contested. He's got a new book out about the limits of polling, but also the utility of it. He recounts how he told the network's anchors and producers after he was watching the tracking polls, including in states that people assumed were going to go for Hillary Clinton, like, say, Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, that I told them to get set for a very late night. He said, well, he says of the midterms at present that it's not clear at all that there's a blue wave. In fact, he says it's unlikely. Not as many partisans today are willing to cross lines. He goes on to say, right now, I think the election looks like a toss-up. We see a Democrat pick up in the House in the 20-odd seat range, but Republicans could certainly hold the House. Even though Republicans have not fared well in special elections so far this cycle, it does look like they will be turning out for the midterm. So far, we do not see a large number of Republicans saying they will flip and vote for a Democrat. And the one other interesting thing about the tracking poll that he's basing these conclusions on is voters say the Democrats need to do more than just oppose Trump. He said the voters he's talking to in the swing congressional districts, mm-hmm. which are the relevant ones, frankly, they're asking what are they arguing we'll get if they take the majority? And that's sort of interesting because
impeachment, tax increase, maybe, you know. Two things. Well, and no plastic straws. Let's get real. Let's do what people really want.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is do you think Democrats may be a bit tone deaf with respect to this? Because Steve Israel, former DCCC director, writing in The Atlantic, Democrats don't need a national message. On the one hand, you have Salvanto saying voters are telling him they want to know what are we going to get if Democrats take the majority, and Democrats, at least a prominent one, saying we don't need a national message.
They know what their message is. Pelosi will be grandmother for the United States, and they'll impeach Trump. That's the come on, man.
Yeah, I know
people aren't Trump alones. They know this.
Well, the question is that enough? Is impeachment of Trump if you have
and the race card antipathy and the towards black Trump card and all that nonsense?
Well, it's but that's the same old.
Yeah, they're pushing it. I don't know if that's enough. I'd like to see what they really stand for. I haven't heard it.
Well, you were hearing it
investment or something like investment.
You were hearing from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for a while.
But she kicked the reporters out of her town hall.
That's right.
I anticipate 300 editorials tomorrow on the left against the press. You think I'll see it?
Why is Ocasio-Cortez hiding? She is the de facto head of the Democrat Party, certainly the intellectual leader, Maxine Waters.
Maxine Waters. Either way, remember this, if socialism actually is, made the law of the land, then I'd call dibs on the zoo animals that have the fattest hams. Because you know what happens when socialism takes over? Eventually, first toilet paper goes, and then we eat the zoo animals.
Right. See Caracas for a present-day example. A happy birthday to the leader of the Democrat Party, Maxine Waters. That's what President Trump tweeted out. Nice birthday wishes.
Anti-Maxine.
So I guess there's some competition for the intellectual leadership of the Dems. But
I did want to ask you, if I may.
Yeah.
I've been butting in lately in this since I've been here. I hope I'm not being rude. But I do want to ask you about this, poll. And black attitudes toward Trump seem to be improving. My question is, why has the Republican Party been unable to exploit a real division wedge in the cities? Which is, every time you see a hotel going up in Chicago, you see the line going around for blocks with African-American people wanting to get jobs. Why aren't they exploiting illegal immigration and the effect of that on wages and low-skill jobs? Why has the Republican Party failed to do that? You would seem to, because the Democrats would. They know how to do a street operation. Why don't I see that on the Republican side?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is, with respect to the black community, it's not at all clear to me that motivates their vote, the immigration issue. That may be the prevailing opinion, but that's not the same thing as saying that's the issue on which their vote turns. That's one. You. So how much ground is there to gain with that as your value proposition? Number two, you just have a whole host of big business, big government Republicans that essentially start from the premise of the left with respect to immigration, and
because they want cheap labor.
Well, right, and also they're afraid of being called racist. I mean, you understand
they want cheap labor. Well, they want cheap labor in the packing houses, in their chicken farms. They want cheap labor.
That's an aspect of it, but you can't look past this other aspect of starting from the left's premise, so you get to the left's conclusion, which is lawlessness, abolish ICE. Oh, I don't know about that. Well, that's the premise you're starting from. That's where this is going, and you're an accomplice in it for the kind of the big business, big government Republicans in the city of Chicago is a good example. The North Shore is a good example. It just because they're afraid of being called racist by blacks doesn't mean they're not also afraid of being called racist by Latinos, right? So if they're just as afraid of the NAACP or as they are of ICER, right? So any group or person of color who would call them a racist, well, you have to understand these country club Republicans just descend into a puddle of tears.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a part of it, too.
But there are operatives there are political operatives, and I'm not talking about whether or not it's the right thing or the wrong thing. I'm talking about I don't see it happening. And it Democrats would work that angle if it were if the hat were reversed.
Well, I mean, I think
that's a natural angle. You have, I remember a guy telling me at a, I know it's anecdotal, but it turns out to be true. A guy tells me at a homicide on the West Side, he says, I can't talk to you. I really want to talk to you, but I can't because I got to take 3 buses and a train to get to Elgin. I'm the last black man at my factory. And I'm thinking, wow. Wow.
Well, I think the
there's
other...
something there.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, certainly I think there's a law and order message here with respect to violent criminals here illegally and the idea of sanctuary city, sanctuary state. I mean, why can't we
ID cards from Mayor Zorro, that sort of thing?
Why can't we talk about that issue here? Because you got a Republican governor that signed sanctuary state legislation. That's part of the problem. This is the surrender I'm talking about.
Gotcha.
But the issue in terms of that being part of the issue, law and order as it pertains to this, when you want to talk about violence in Chicago or violence in this country generally, many cases that we've talked about all the time of people who shouldn't be in this country, and everyone agrees, and yet they're here, and local authorities don't honor ICE detainer requests and sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, and then the next person gets raped or violently assaulted or killed unnecessarily. And if you can't generate consensus on that, then the country's sort of lost. And the Republican Party certainly is, if the Republican Party can't generate consensus on that. The other thing I'd say, though, too, is I think there's a real desire to accentuate the positive, particularly in the era of Trump, because it is so contentious. And so you see, like, this op-ed at Real Clear Politics by Jake Kasten, who's the political director for Paul Ryan's one of Paul Ryan's operations. He makes the note that the point that CNN survey from this summer, 57% of Americans say things are going well in the USA today, which is the largest proportion to share these sentiments since January of 2007, before the crash. And so I think one of the things they say is we need to do more to accentuate the positive, to talk about how the economy is performing, where the job creation that's going on, the deregulation that's spurring growth, and you talk more about, to the Salvanto's question from those swing district voters, what's in it for me, what's in it for you is prosperity and opportunity for your family. And I think there's a desire for Republicans to go in that pro-growth message because of the evidence, rather than just pick the issues that are so divisive and get into all of the fights that President Trump picks. I mean, I think that's part of it as well. And I'm not, and I don't think it's illegitimate. I think you can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think you can take on an issue like sanctuary city, sanctuary state, border security, ejecting violent criminals who are not in this country legally, as well as talk about economic growth. Mike in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
I think one of the reasons the polls, discussions, people's interpretation of the polls are always so wrong with Trump is his only explanation. He's a paradigm shift. All the old rules don't apply. Trump is the first Republican I've seen that'll actually fight back with the press. When somebody called a previously Republican politician a racist or whatever, there was silence. And when somebody accuses you of something and you're silent, that's a de facto admission that, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
And Trump doesn't take it.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J. And John, you had to see Sister Mary Jo Sobieck from Marian Catholic over the weekend, didn't you?
I've seen the clip, yeah.
This is going viral. At least if nothing else, Chicago produces some very colorful nuns. You had Sister Jean, now you got Sister Mary Jo. She was... she threw out the first pitch, the Sox-KC game.
She bounced it off her bicep.
Yeah.
Then picked it and threw a breaking ball right over the plate.
I mean, it was a great yacker. There's no question about it.
Filthy. Filthy nun.
Not wearing mom jeans.
No.
Got it to home plate. She had a glove on.
I bet you if you asked her who is her favorite Sox player at Kaminsky Field.
Mm-hmm. She'd be able to name one.
Obama said, yeah. She'd probably say Dick Allen.
This is Sister Mary Jo, who is going to throw out the first pitch, but with a little added extra. Look at this thing. A pretty good job of it. Throws it in the zone.
So I asked her, how hard can you throw a baseball? And she purposely took something off it on the pitch there because she wanted to show her impressive movement. And she said she's been to like a county fair or an amusement park where they have that game where you can throw the baseball and it'll tell you how hard you throw it and you try to match it. She said she threw the ball. Ready for this?
Yeah.
76 miles per hour.
Man. That's pretty good. I was impressed with how quickly it got back in her hand on that video. It's magic.
Greatest athlete Marion Catholic has produced since Tyler Ulis. And the funny thing that, you know, what turned out after that on Saturday night, she started for the Sox on Sunday.
They have, they're selling Kopech jerseys, though. I want to tell all my Sox fan friends, calm down. He hasn't even started his first game. They're already selling Kopech jersey.
Wait till you
give me a break.
Wait till you see the Sobiech jerseys, how fast they're going to go.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is the equally leggy and lovely John Cass of the Chicago Tribune.
Lovely, definitely. My name, you think lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. There's no question about it. John... the jury resumes deliberations in the Paul Manafort trial this morning.
What will happen?
You got Mueller's team recommending a 6-month prison sentence for Papadopoulos for lying to the FBI.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that Papadopoulos' wife is going to be satisfied with that. She's acted as his de facto spokesman through much of the saga, as you've seen. Papadopoulos, international man of mystery.
That may be true, and he may be a puppet, and he may have been used by both sides, not one side being Putin and the other side being Mueller. But I'm worried, what about the professor, Miss School? Why aren't we hearing about him, the mysterious professor?
He disappeared, and that's why they want the six-month sentence for Papadopoulos, because they could have stopped him from leaving the country, and he hasn't returned, questioned him, perhaps charged him if he did something illicit. That's so says the Mueller team in their sentencing recommendation to a judge.
I'm getting a sense from you that you're not buying into the whole Mueller is God on earth.
Paragon of moral virtue. American treasure, as John Brennan called him.
More than a bishop.
And a lot of Republicans have showed unbelievable deference and patience with Mueller too. I've sort of exhausted my tolerance of that. You know. Remember the line from Seabiscuit when he's going to race War Admiral, and the paper talks about War Admiral being a perfect horse, and Jeff Bridges says, "Show me something that's perfect, and I'll show you something that's not perfect." All you have to do is scratch a little bit below the surface. We've talked to actually some former FBI agents who worked under Bob Mueller at the FBI, and they remind you about cases like the anthrax case where Mueller and Comey got it wrong and they pursued the wrong guy and they wouldn't listen to profilers who were trying to tell them to pump the brakes, and they wound up settling a 7-figure lawsuit with respect to the guy they wrongly pursued in that case. So, yeah, and pardon me if I'm not into the hero worship backslapping game that the Beltway crowd and some goofballs on talk radio are in with respect to Mueller. It's just not me. I look at what somebody does. Let's see the work product. And boy, oh boy, if by some, even though Manafort is facing another trial in D.C., if he were acquitted or the jury was hung in this case, remember they asked for clarification on the definition of reasonable doubt.
Right.
Not a good sign.
If you're a prosecutor.
No.
You want that guy convicted in an hour so they could have lunch.
And this sort of cone of silence. I get the Mueller team, and you don't want to disclose, and you don't want to politicize and so forth. But the complete lack of explanation, how long it takes, how much scrutiny is required for these agencies to hold themselves accountable with respect to their personnel, whether it's senior leadership at FBI or whether that's Bruce Orr guy at Justice.
All that's legit, but here's the problem with that. Eventually, you're the president of the United States. The Congress wants documents. You can declassify that stuff and let it go.
Yeah, I agree. He should.
But he doesn't.
He should.
He doesn't.
I agree. But here's the, you know, the trick bag I think the president's in, assuming that there is nothing to hide there. And so that's an assumption. I don't know. And if there is something to hide, then it should be unearthed. Is if he does that, remember, any pronouncement he makes or action he takes is seen as more evidence of collusion, obstruction, and this is going to be the basis for some phony baloney charge of obstruction against him or argument of obstruction if Democrats take the House.
I don't hear collusion anymore. I hear obstruction.
Right.
Right. If they don't come with a real charge on this guy, then what they've done, all of them, and that whole crowd, that whole simpering, mincing crowd in Washington,
mincing,
on
I love
both
that word.
Sides,
yeah.
You know, I look, Versailles, okay? It's Versailles. That's where it is.
Rudy G sort of serves as the president's legal team spokesman.
He could be in Versailles talking about the existence of God or not.
The other line they're pushing, right, is... when is Trump going to sit down with Mueller? What's going on with that?
Right.
Why so recalcitrant? Okay. So Rudy G. explored the metaphysical question, what is truth, with Chuck Todd, which wouldn't be my philosophical partner to have that discussion. And the question I have, and I'll put to you and the listening audience after we hear from Rudy G., is it time for Trump to explore a different person as his face guy for the Trump legal team?
Like yesterday.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
You believe this is on them, that you would have, that you guys have not delayed the interviewing, delayed the negotiations?
Yeah, yes, each time by 3 or 4 days so we could write a letter in response. They have taken 2 to 3 weeks to get back to us. So what I have to tell you is, look, I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation.
Truth is
about,
truth. I don't mean to go like.
No, it isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. The president of the United States says, I didn't.
Truth isn't truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what I
no, no, no.
This is going to become a bad
Don't do this to me.
Don't do truth
Donald
is a truth
Trump,
to me.
Donald Trump says, I didn't talk about Flynn with Comey. Comey says, you did talk about it. So tell me what the truth is.
Don McGahn might
if
know.
If you're such a genius, Don McGahn doesn't know. If that's the situation,
okay.
They have two pieces of evidence. Trump says, I didn't tell him. And the other guy says that he did say it, which is the truth. Because you're
under
a genius.
Two people, I know you're right. I don't read minds on that front. Let me ask you this final question.
No. Let me finish. We have a credibility gap between the two of them. You got to select one or the other. Now, who do you think Mueller's going to select? One of his best friends, Comey, or the president, who he has been carrying on a completely wild, crazy,
is it possible?
Unorthodox investigation?
I hope truth isn't truth. Doesn't become what the definition of is.
You're having a conversation about truth with Todd at Meet the Press? First of all, okay, big mistake.
Well, and I understand what Giuliani is trying to say, but the point of having somebody go on to these shows is for them to say what they're trying to say properly.
What's he trying to say? Because I think if it were me and Trump was grandpa and I was in charge of his estate, I would say, hey, Rudy Giuliani, when I can see, like, that old man thing where they got, like, little grit and they're trying to work it around their teeth on TV, you know what I mean? The tongue moving in and out. Look, we're all going to be old if we're lucky. So, but still, time to go. Get yourself a good lawyer, man.
You can't have excited utterances like truth isn't truth.
You
explain... I mean, this is like, why not put Jay Sekulow out there? I suspect he would have very calmly explained, here's what Mueller is trying to do. And if it's a he said versus he said, it will be the basis for a spurious prosecution or impeachment proceeding of President Trump. And so we're going to make sure that the ground rules are fair to President Trump, since, again, this investigative team, according to every account, has produced no evidence of anything other than possibly Paul Manafort's illegal activity with respect to his business dealings,
years
possibly
before
Papadopoulos lying to federal authorities.
The problem is that Donald McGahn, another Trump lawyer, is talking to the special prosecutor.
Yeah, is it a problem? It's not clear that it's not. No, actually, it's not clear that it's a problem.
Is it? If it was the outfit, it would be a problem. It'd be.
Well, Trump said he's not a rat, so you won't have to get knocked
he's
off.
Not a rat.
No, but
if they ask you to go to Chinatown for spaghetti dinner at midnight, don't go. That's what I'd say.
We have no idea what McGahn was asked or what he provided.
Yeah,
right. So, I mean, they've interviewed all kinds of people. This is the frustrating thing about this investigation is all sorts of people have been whistled in. All sorts of people have offered testimony or answered questions. And where are we at with Richard Burr, the chairman of the Senate Intel Committee, this week saying we have seen no evidence of collusion or criminal conspiracy between the Trump administration and Russia?
Right. So what are we watching? A takedown of a president?
Well,
that's dangerous.
And, but if that is the effort afoot, then you would think the Praetorian Guard of this president would be better at protecting him, or the president would get better Praetorian Guards, because Rudy G isn't cutting it right now, in my estimation. Bruce in Bloomingdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Judge Jeanine won't be an improvement. I'm just saying.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I think Rudy ought to be given a nice gold watch, thanked for his efforts, patted on the head, and sent back to wherever he came from, and bring in Mark Levin and snap the leash off.
All right, thanks for the call, Bruce. Rudy G's performance, one of the reasons he sort of never got out of the gate when he tried to run for president. Remember that?
What happened?
In 2008. Well, I mean, he just was, you know, I don't know, maybe in the 90s that shtick worked in New York, or maybe he was better at it, the timing.
He wasn't 100 years old then.
Well,
come on, he's like, truth is not truth is truth. Come on, man. Yeah. Chill.
Hmm. What about Judge Judy? You know what? She wouldn't do it. She makes too much money. You know, she's the highest
Judge paid. Jeanine.
I know, but Judge Judy is the highest paid person on television.
Get out of here.
I'm not kidding.
More highly paid than Brian Stelter or whatever his name is, that little bald-headed weasel on CNN?
Judge Judy makes more money than LeBron James. Not kidding.
Yeah, Judge Judy, keep dribbling. Don't talk politics.
Sign of the apocalypse.
Right.
Tom and Deer
Cats
Park.
With dogs.
Good morning, gentlemen. You're on the right track. Both the previous caller and what you're discussing is why Rudy Giuliani is the perfect legal representation for Donald Trump, because legal representation for Donald Trump isn't based on legal acumen. It's what you can address to the audience. The audience is two entities. One, it's the Fox News viewer. It doesn't understand. It really gets into this sort of stuff, and this Orwellian blather goes right to that part of their brain. And the other viewer is Donald Trump, and it's a circuitous loop. So they're both feeding off of each other. The dumber Rudy can be, it appeals to the audience of two, the Fox viewing audience and Donald Trump.
Interestingly, he was on Meet the Press. But the underlying substance of the matter, Tom, you concerned at all that nobody has produced any evidence with respect to the allegations that are being parroted by the Democrats and the D.C. press corps?
Seems to me there's been no leaking, which is what everybody was beefing about. So now we're supposed to have leaks so we can talk about leaks. I have no idea.
Right. So there's you understand there is no evidence that's been produced a year and a half in.
I have no idea if there's any evidence produced.
Well,
doesn't it matter to you, man?
Does it matter that Richard Burr and Trey Gowdy say no, and the Democrats are incapable of producing anything to substantiate a yes? Are you paying attention at all to that, or is it just your kind of vitriol at the direction of Trump, and you're forgetting what the underlying substance of the issue is? Is it concerning to you at all that you have a party trying to take down a president without any evidence to support any claim, any impeachable offense, much less criminal offense? Is that a concern?
It concerns me a lot. I'm old school, libertarian leanings. I'm no fan of the FBI, never have been. All of a sudden, you know, the FBI used to be the big thing of the conservatives. Well, boy, that shirt switched real fast when the president Trump got his pants on the hot seat. So, no, I haven't changed one bit. I say let it all air out and then clean it out. That's right. What I say. But I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not any insider. None of us are.
Oh, I know. But thanks for the call, Tom. I understand that. But we have to go on, at this point, the pronouncements or lack thereof from parties that do have knowledge.
What is knowledge?
Knowledge isn't knowledge.
I tweeted out this like big me and you on the. I put a picture of Diogenes holding a lantern. I wonder if who got it. Okay?
Keep looking, Diogenes.
Right. There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one, Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is Chicago Tribune legend John Cass. John, silencing conservatives on social media, is this a issue that is the proper province of Congress? Should this face a congressional inquiry? Because there's some talk of by one House committee, the House Energy and Commerce Committee, of subpoenaing Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey for amid allegations that he shadow bans conservatives.
He's a lefty. His people are the people that he hires are lefties.
He fully admits, John, that his employees at Twitter lean left.
Yeah.
Lean.
Right.
Just a little bit of.
Right. Lean. That's what I do when I'm eating a peach from Calhoun County or a beef sandwich. You lean.
Yeah, just a lean.
But I lean forward. I don't lean to the left or right.
President Trump tweeting about this over the weekend. Social media is totally discriminating against Republican conservative voices. Speaking loudly and clearly for the Trump administration, we won't let that happen.
Well, so what, you're going to do an executive order demanding more conservatives?
Too many voices are being destroyed, some good and some bad, and that cannot be allowed to happen, he continued. Censorship is a very dangerous thing and absolutely impossible to police.
Then why? How can you do anything? What's truth? What is truth?
Okay, Rudy. Here's the thing, and John Hendrake over at Powerline blog had a good write-up on this over the weekend as well, and he points out what we've discussed on this show, what's happened to our colleague Dennis Prager. Who's one of the great intellectuals of our time. Serious person, Prager University videos, popular, well-produced, thoughtful. It's not conspiracy theories. It's not hate speech.
The war against boys.
We're talking about Dennis Prager, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, cigar.
And
he likes to talk about happiness on Friday.
Well, that's right, and relationships and the rest. Prager, but, Prager U is suing YouTube for downgrading Prager University's videos, even though they're popular and YouTube makes money when people watch them. And when that happened, when Prager University sued Google, parent company of YouTube, Facebook has subsequently shadow banned Prager University into complete silence to its more than 3 million followers, according to internal Facebook analytics. Our last 9 posts have been completely censored, reaching 0 of our 3 million followers, said one media personality with Prager University.
Are they doing that to everybody?
Well, this is the point. They're not. This is a first for us, said Prager University Chief Marketing Officer. While we've experienced blatant discrimination from Google, YouTube, which is why we filed legal action against them, this represents a whole new level of censorship by Facebook. At this point, Facebook has provided little clarity in saying it will get back to us in another 2 to 3 business days, which in the world of social media might as well be an eternity.
So far, you're talking only about allegations. I don't see any. Where's the proof that they were shut down by Facebook?
Well, the analytics tell you that the videos didn't reach any of your followers. We also, remember when Zuckerberg was before Congress and he got peppered about essentially banning Diamond and Silk.
Yeah.
And then, we're going to talk to Diamond and Silk. And we've talked to Diamond and Silk, and they really haven't gotten satisfaction with Facebook. So
does the federal government regulate social media?
Well, here's the thing. When you, and Hinrichs makes this point, when you have simultaneous bans and suspensions across platforms, as happened to Prager University or even Alex Jones, the phrase, writes Hinrichs, combination or conspiracy and restraint of trade comes to mind. It may not be the law that I would promote in my kind of free minds, free markets utopia, but it is. There are federal trade regulations regarding commerce. So there's an issue, or there could be. It's arguable. Hinrichs writes, and I think this is a good topic to think about, the proper solution may lie in creating competitive platforms. Of course, conservatives need to start...
conservative platform?
Well, conservatives need to start building their own infrastructure. Build a good product. This is what we'll talk to Klavan, Andrew Klavan, at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, but we talk about this all the time. Write a good story, produce a good movie, and it just happens to be that it was done by conservatives rather than liberals. Yeah. You can't always complain about the left building infrastructure that if you had the talent, you could build. Conservatives have, there's talented conservatives out there.
They invest in it.
Well, you're right? No kidding. But he makes the point of that has been argued, should these social media giants be considered public utilities? Federal Express doesn't refuse to deliver packages to National Review on the ground that they make conservative communications. Telephone companies haven't tried to cut off connections when two conservatives are talking. Why should Facebook, Twitter, YouTube be permitted to engage in political discrimination? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Should they?
Well, shouldn't they be able to discriminate against some loser like Alex Jones? I've heard on this show, right, his lawyer saying, oh, that stuff is an act, right? I've heard you talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, he's a phony. So shouldn't they be able to shut down a hater like that?
Take your calls, but now for more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by presidential historian, author of Game of Thorns, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy. Doug Weed has written about this shadow banning of conservatives and censoring pro-Trump content. Doug, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Good to join you guys.
So what is your perspective on the evidence presented with respect to Prager University and others? Is the president right to suggest congressional inquiry, if not action?
Short answer is I don't know, but listening to you fellows talk, I was reminded of in the 1950s with the advent of network television, Dwight Eisenhower was very, very concerned. He spoke with James Hagerty, his press secretary. He said there's no way the founding fathers could have envisioned the power that network television would represent. And Hagerty said, hey, these are great men of integrity, Sarnoff, Paley. I know these men personally. And Eisenhower was very dubious, and they worked out some kind of agreement, which was that when Eisenhower needed the airwaves, they would absolutely give him, and the government would take the airwaves, and in return, the networks could have some independence, but they were limited on the number of channels they could own, and so the FCC evolved and all of that. So I see that with internet right now. This is an unusual moment. I don't know that it's going to be resolved by supply and demand.
Can the government impose its will on a private company that's on the internet? You know, they might hate conservatives. Guess what? I'm a conservative. I know I'm being hated. I mean, it's not something surprising to me, but can the government do that? I don't think it can.
What I'm seeing with this current issue is how it's affecting the little guy. Since my article was published in the Federalist, I've received just dozens of emails and phone calls from people who claim that their businesses were shut down, that they'd say something on Twitter, suddenly they'd find their Facebook shadow banned, their business. And the same with Amazon. All of them have the same stories, though they don't know each other. They're in denial for a year or two, can't believe it's real, face the metrics and say, it's got to be real. Look at these numbers.
And one of them said to me, I got a new identity, I got new bank accounts, I got new IP address, I'm up and running, I'm making money again, but I'm never going to talk on one of those social media platforms again because I can't afford to lose my business.
Well, I mean, so I'm on the board of a crisis pregnancy center in Chicago called Aid for Women, the advisory board, actually. We've got an upcoming event with Mike Huckabee, like an annual gala dinner. It's a crisis pregnancy center, nonprofit. They help women in crisis with their pregnancy, housing, clothing, the like.
Right.
Crisis pregnancy center. The ad for the dinner featuring Mike Huckabee rejected by Facebook. Because why? Probably because it has pro-life in there, or because it has crisis pregnancy center, or because it doesn't have Planned Parenthood. I don't know. But so, I appreciate what you're saying, Doug, in terms of the feedback you're getting about how this happens to the little guy, not just big guys that can at least respond at some level like Prager can and is. So this is the debate that we need to have. There's one sort of sense among conservatives, obviously censorship is with respect to the government, not with respect to private enterprise, generally speaking. But there are laws with respect to, as Hindraker made the point, with respect to commerce. And perhaps if you can't encourage them to be more open-minded about the content that they allow to flow through their channels, then you look at the law as it exists that the left would use against businesses with respect to improper restraint of trade and other violations of business policy, federal regulations on business, and you apply them to these big social media giants.
People on the left, too, are getting caught up in this, which is fascinating. I had an email from someone who said that they posted something that was anti-Trump, but they were using sarcasm. And they think the Google bots or the people from the Southern Poverty Law Center or whoever misunderstood or were operating too quickly, and they got shadow banned, even though what they were saying was anti-Trump. I guess sometimes the Internet can't discern sarcasm or irony, and they can get caught up in it. It's just reaching, in my opinion, preposterous proportions. My argument was over a video with Trish Regan and myself on Fox News, and I finally got through to some people at Google. They spent 2 or 3 days talking to me, calling back. They couldn't figure out why it was banned. And then they finally got the right person, and they explained, it's nothing you said, and it's nothing that Trish Regan said. It's the crawler along the bottom of the screen, and they were the words of Donald Trump referring to this Russian thing as a witch hunt. That was the reason that it was being opposed.
Who told you this, sir?
A spokesperson at Google.
Now, we're speaking to Doug Weed. His story in The Federalist recently is these screenshots show how Google shadow bans conservatives and pro-Trump content. As a historian, right, where do you see this going? When does it build to some sort of critical mass where it has a real political impact on the other side?
Yeah, I don't really, John. I don't really know. I think it's gone pretty far already. I travel back and forth to Russia, and I noticed the evolution of Putin's strength when he became more strong. I noticed they had complete freedom. They could talk about anything, but once Putin's strength showed itself, they wouldn't talk about him. They just wouldn't talk about him publicly in a restaurant, anywhere. They just wouldn't say anything that anybody else can repeat. And now I'm seeing that among business people who are, use e-commerce. They can think whatever they want to think, but they're not going to say it out loud. Someone can overhear it. They could post it on Facebook or somewhere and shut their business down.
You're describing, Mr. Reed, you're describing rat cage on the face, room 101.
It's not big government. It's big social media.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
But big corporate and big government are twins, right? They're brothers.
Well, that's the whole. That was the whole appeal to Trump. Many people were concerned with both the Republicans and the Democrats. We had 16 years of the poor getting poor and the rich getting richer, not because the poor were stupid, but because The rich were getting interest-free money from the Federal Reserve, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. Big companies would get the Obama stimulus plan and not have to enforce environmental regulations. Another company would have to enforce those regulations. And people just got tired of the legalized corruption. And that was the appeal of Trump. This is a guy that they didn't want us to vote for. And that's exactly who a lot of people said, okay, that's who I'm going to vote for.
So they do it through the hip social media outlets rather than the stodgy, discredited government. He is Doug Weed, presidential historian, author of Game of Thorns, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy. His column in The Federalist, John Cash just mentioned, these screenshots show how Google shadow bans conservative and pro-Trump content. This is a topic that's not going away. Doug, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J this morning. We'll pick up our conversation about social media silencing conservatives after the news. Take your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. But John, my favorite setup here, a Saudi and a liberal New York City woman walk into a restaurant. You know what happened?
Tell me.
You ready? This comes to us from Tyler Cohen at Marginal Revolution. This is sort of cute. The woman says to the table of Saudi nationals, so where are y'all from? Saudi man, Saudi Arabia. Is that your wife in there? Yes. Is she driving yet? The woman asks him. No, New York City woman. Why not? She doesn't need to. I was just wondering because they made such a big deal out of it on TV, and I was thinking maybe they aren't all driving yet. She does not need to, he repeats. But why not? Madam, you live in New York City. Are you driving yet? Not bad. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. We are about 8 or 9 years into the Third American Revolution. I'm going to explain that again when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and John Cass in for Amy J. And we were having this conversation with Doug Weed, presidential historian, about social media silencing conservative content and voices. And it's one thing to talk about Alex Jones being bounced. It's another thing to talk about Dennis Prager. Or is it? Should we be concerned at all about Twitter, Facebook, Google, YouTube making decisions to, as Doug Weed was explaining, even ban Doug Weed's interview on Fox Business with Trish Regan because there was a Trump witch hunt on the Chiron scroll below his interview, banning any presidential utterances?
Why aren't people of the left, like all of, Sue Young's comments, shadow banned.
Oh, John? John from New York Times?
Yeah, like, I hate white men. White men suck.
Because that's acceptable hate speech.
Right?
But the question is, so acceptable hate speech, right, from those of the left, the identity politics obsessed left, that communicate in vile terms. Is it Twitter's
or
Facebook, Google's prerogative to allow what they want to allow and not allow what they don't want to allow? And if it's political affiliation, that's the determinative characteristic, then so be it. Or if it's political content, that's the determinative, then so be it. We're not talking about government censorship here. We're talking about, private content decisions through privately owned channels.
But there is pressure. And you start putting that kind of pressure on the body politic along with 300 editorials in lockstep for whatever. But in this case, it was against Trump.
Well, John,
you get a sense that there's no they're almost driving people to support Trump.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you want to force the social media giants to treat conservatives and conservative content the same as leftists and leftist content, or is it their call? Real simple. Or is it? John Hindraker, writing in Powerline blog, makes the point that perhaps these social media platforms fit the definition of a public utility. He writes, Federal Express doesn't refuse to deliver packages to National Review's office on the grounds they may contain conservative communications. Telephone companies haven't tried to cut off connections when two conservatives are talking. Why should Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube be permitted to engage in political discrimination? The problem with his argument is Federal Express could refuse to deliver packages to National Review if they wanted to. And so could the telephone company cut off conversations with conservatives or not provide them telephone service if they wanted to, arguably.
And I'm not going to bake anybody a cake that I don't want to. Bake it for him.
Okay, Jack Phillips, that's a bridge too far. Or is it?
Peach.
It's not a bridge too far.
Peach cake.
But this is the interesting thing. So Jack Phillips wins that Supreme Court case. We talked about it. Mm-hmm. And now he's back in court because mm-hmm. they sent another, or maybe it was of this person's own volition, but it was a way to force him to choose between his faith and his business, which,
all
of course,
this is part of a, it's yes. part of a whole. It's like, I don't know how a pressure cooker works, Dan, but I think it works with pressure and heat. And after a while, something has to go. Something starts, you know, you have to have a valve that lets it go. And I just see that all this stuff, what you're talking about with the social media, with all that, with the government, with the news media, the so-called mainstream media, 300 editorials. We're going to act independently by writing 300 editorials that say the same thing.
Yes.
All that is just pushing people.
Right. Well, so you don't have to use Google. You can use DuckDuckGo as your search engine, right? I mean, why not? Conservatives should stop bitching and build their own castles, build their own infrastructure. What about that argument? Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Rick in Joliet, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you? I, you know, Dan, you stole my thunder a little bit, but I've been thinking about this for a while. I mean, I think this presents an opportunity for somebody or for a group of people to provide the same type of service, maybe not social media. I don't know about replication of Facebook, but certainly YouTube for hosting not necessarily even conservative videos, but a conservative content-friendly environment where if you have a video about how to clean your boat that's on YouTube, you can put that on the conservative one as well, or at least the one that's tolerant of conservative views.
Yeah, okay.
Then they'll know how to find us. Make it easier for them to find us, man.
Well, I mean, think about college campuses. I mean, you have college campuses that routinely censor or freeze out conservative voices to the benefit of the left, both their faculty as well as those they invite and even pay to speak on campus.
You can't even listen to Jordan Peterson without people getting upset, right?
So should we regulate a college campus as well? At least, generally speaking, they're the recipients or beneficiaries of tax dollars through grants, through student loan financing.
They're the places of safe spaces.
But Twitter, Google, Facebook, private companies. You know, how do we reconcile this? It's an interesting topic, I think, which is why we're talking about it. Jeff and Berwin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Greetings, Dan and John.
Hello.
John, I love it when you sub for Amy. You're great.
Thanks,
you kind of stole my thunder here because I was going to bring up the obvious double standard of these social platforms being have the right because they're, quote, private companies, but they're not. They're publicly traded. To censor anybody they want for whatever reason. But a wedding cake baker in Colorado or Oregon gets sued because he doesn't want to deal with those people. Now, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV, but I think the 1964 Civil Rights Act has a public accommodations clause that, yes, if you own a restaurant or whatever, but you have to serve people under some category. All right, well, doesn't that apply to Facebook and Twitless? I mean, I know this is kind of rhetorical, so help me out here. I mean, if you guys can expand what you were just talking about before you took my call.
Politically,
thanks for the call,
politically,
Jeff.
Once the American people realized that it was fundamentally regardless of law, once people realized it was un-American, it was against our understanding of being American,
right,
to deny someone a seat on the lunch counter, civil rights was done. That was it. This one, I don't know, we're so fragmented, and everyone's going to social media, all the columnists are. Some of them say things on Twitter that about the left or the right that I would never say about the left. I mean, stuff that I can't believe is allowed, but they do.
Well,
vulgar things.
It's interesting. It's worth noting because, remember, we've spoken to a representative from PragerU about their lawsuit against Google/YouTube. And they're really making a contract. It's really a contract claim. It's essentially Google, right, YouTube are violating the terms of their service. And so it's a contract claim. So it's not really a First Amendment claim. It's a contract case and a commercial claim. The question is, should it become a sort of a civil rights issue, if you will?
The first column I write every week is the national column. I'm going to go Google all this. May I Google it? The PragerU stories?
I prefer you use DuckDuckGo.
Whatever. And what will I find? Has the media been covering it or shying away, leaving it to be sort of like a fringe thing?
Bob and Lyle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, hi, Dan and John. I feel like everybody's late to the party here. You know, my feeling is that in the United States of America, this happened probably within the last 20 years, maybe even before, that there's such a great censorship, it's all political, that you can't get your point of view across if you're not in the same or you don't subscribe to the same thing. And it's the same thing in Europe. They have what they call liberal socialism. There's a monopoly on everything, plus there's hate speech and everything else. So I think that it does tie into the First Amendment to some degree of what you can say and what you can't say. And it even gets down to education, what you can teach in schools. And on the religious end, it's the worst. You have no rights at all to say anything anymore on any subject.
Well, thanks for the call, Bob. But do you want the government to intervene here? I mean, when the left tried to use the government to intervene in talk radio, right, equal time, because conservatives dominate talk radio, should the left, should we concede equal time in exchange for equal time on social media? Do you want to play that game? I don't. I mean, again, because they don't believe in a free marketplace of ideas means that we shouldn't either. We're not them. We should guard the fact that we're not jealously rather than employ their same approach, use that same cudgel of government, shouldn't we?
Well said.
George in Schaumburg.
Hey, yeah, so I think it's more of a bigger issue with the passing of repealing the net neutrality a couple months back. What happens when it goes to the internet service providers? I mean, it's bigger than YouTube, bigger than Google. What happens when they prioritize our searches? And let's say you're looking for a PragerU or a Walsh Freedom, and they put that on the fifth page of the Google search. We voted for that. We didn't vote for that, but that's what happened. And it's a bigger issue than limiting Google, making a new YouTube. It's a controlling over the marketplace in general because we agree that it's private pipelines that we're subscribing to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Thanks for the call, George. It's a fair point.
So they can diminish conservative views. You mean, are you telling me that I really should have like millions of followers? Is that what you're saying? I'm victim? How do you know? How can you tell if you're a victim of it?
You can. I mean, I'm not a tech guru in this space, but I mean, the way that, for example, Prague University figured it out is they looked at their analytics and they just looked, and you can see that you're content is not being able to be seen by your followers, by your community. So that's obviously a Facebook thing. And then you contact the provider and the provider essentially concedes the point, and then you're arguing about how it should be remedied.
In the news business, you have a television station or you have a newspaper, but you also have stuff online, right?
Yeah.
And I would wonder, the old models were the publisher and the editor were deciding who was, you know, what news was up and what was in the back of the book. Now you have all this, you have IT people and
algorithms people, and then algorithms, checkers, and
people who push it, you know, on the Tribune.com site, for example. And you have to wonder, I'm not singling out my paper, but all of them, what would the, you know, Jennifer Rubin, another Trump voters are stupid, you suck Trump voters, from the Washington Post, is that get pushed up over something else? I mean, there's a lot here. There's a lot to unpack here, but the principles are the thing.
Right. And so
the principle is we don't use the hammer of government to win the argument. Correct?
Well, this is where that position runs into the reality on the ground, and this is why it's an interesting topic, because some are willing to sort of recast these
enterprises
for the purposes of achieving their outcome, and that just becomes a dangerous game. There are implications for that sort of precedent-setting behavior, and that's why these things need to be thought through and talked through, you know, in the free marketplace of ideas that exists at AM 560, not on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is storied Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass. And
Legendary.
Mm-hmm. Legendary and storied. How about both? And John, so Rudy G sort of gave the left some bulletin board material on Meet the Press over the weekend, and I'm sure you'll see truth is not truth in
memes.
Campaign commercials in
memes
addition to memes. Yes, of course. Michelle Goldberg, and I don't know why this isn't amplified more, some of the ridiculous statements that are emblematic of the intellectual heft of the left at the moment. Michelle Goldberg, she was on talking about President Trump, MSNBC roundtable with Katie Tour. And here's what she had to say about the president.
Oh, no, he's not. He's not the leader of the free world, but sorry.
Well, by default, he's the leader of the free world.
Angela Merkel's the leader of the free world, but...
Well, he is the most important person in the world, in politics right now, and he is very vocal. And I do agree with you that this does express a level of exasperation among his aides that they can't have any control over.
I'm sorry. Your argument that he's not the leader of the free world because he's not standing up for democracy, he's not standing up for humanitarian rights.
He's a sort of junior player in a block of authoritarian countries.
And the people like the European Union are no longer looking at him as a leader any longer, and they're thinking of doing their own thing.
They see him as, right, they see he's instead, he's like, right, he's part of a block that includes Vladimir Putin, Duterte. He's, you know, he's kind of part of a, he's part of kind of an axis of power.
It's worse than that.
I mean, not that that's not the worst thing you could have said, because it's about the worst thing you could say about him. But
well,
if he's not the leader,
rounding
of the
people
free,
up and murdering
America,
murdering them, yeah, without any you know, yeah, due process.
He'd certainly like to.
President Trump would probably like to round people up and murder them without due process. Michelle Goldberg, New York Times columnist, like Sarah Jong, New York Times editorial board member. These are the deep thinkers. These are your betters telling you what time it is. Authoritarian despots, Duterte, Putin, Trump has made us a third world country. He's no different. He's part of an axis with Putin and Duterte.
I think much of social media is about name calling and stupidity. And I think that some of these columnists engage in that to the point of, and name calling is good. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I use nicknames all the time.
As do I.
But you have to have some analysis with it, and to say that on air and not be laughed at by people of the left. There are many people of the left who should be mocking Michelle Goldberg for saying such a ridiculous, stupid thing. They're not.
Yeah,
and I wonder if it's discourse to the point, you know, someone joked, John, when are you going to come down to the Tribune Tower and sit in your little, you know, common desk with all the other columnists?
Yeah.
And I say it's not a, what is it, friendly, toxic environment or something? But
in Cube World down at Cube World. The new Trib, yeah.
Right. But in the day of William Buckley and people of the left that he would debate, anyone talking in those terms, either from the left or the right, and I hear it from the right too, would be laughed at.
They're not serious people.
Not serious people.
They're not serious people. And the interesting thing to me, it seems, just
that's our discourse now.
And it's, you know, and I have issues with Trump's communication choices often, but what he's done is he's sort of exposed all of these other pseudo intellects that have been populating the editorial pages and the newsrooms and the television screen for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. He's exposed them.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that there, you know, there's always a drag. Usually a drag, shouldn't say always, usually a drag for the party in power in midterm elections. And so we're 80 days out, we're talking about midterm elections. But I'm not surprised by the pronouncements from Salvanto, the CBS pollster out this weekend, that he doesn't see a blue wave, that a blue wave is unlikely, that you're looking at maybe the Democrats pick up 20-some-odd seats, but maybe the Republicans hold the House and obviously the Senate. And he wouldn't be surprised by that either when you look at the when you get the feedback from the voters in these 50 to 60 odd swing congressional districts.
They think these pseudo intellectuals, particularly the New York Times,
they think they're the Pied Pipers.
No, I know. I mean, the boss of the New York Times, Dean Baquet, and I worked together for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a decent man, but the people he's employing are ridiculous, and they think. They don't understand why Trump won the election. It's not because people don't like Trump. It's because people hate you guys. They can't stand that nonsense that comes out of your mouth. They really can't stand it.
Well, and
that liberal condescension and that, you know, oh, he wants to kill everybody. Round us up, really? Or John Brennan, treason, really? I mean, it's just like okay to say whatever you want out of your mouth. It reminds me of what my grandfather said, Papu Pete, who would say, "Aftos milai, kyogaidros klani."
It's funny. I would always that's my saying.
You know what it means?
Yeah.
When the left speaks, the donkeys break wind. So they're talking to their big policy. Grandpa, oh, blah 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 blah. Meanwhile, while they're going blah blah blah, yeah. There's a bunch of donkeys tied up to a post, and they're breaking wind.
Grandpa Pete really cut to the chase.
Yes, he did.
He really boiled it down. John Brennan, since you were talking about asses, was on Meet the Press this week, and he doubled down. Yeah. He doubled down on treason, like you were saying. This is John Brennan, who's now, of course, announced he's contemplating litigating the revocation of his security clearance.
See, discovery, Alderman.
Do you regret essentially accusing the president of treason? Do you regret some of the things you have said?
I called his behavior treasonous, which is to betray one's trust and to aid and abet the enemy, and I stand very much by that claim.
You are the former CIA director accusing the sitting president of the United States. It's not a private citizen. A lot of people hear the former CIA director accusing the sitting president of the United States of treason. That's a monumental accusation.
Well, I think these are abnormal times, and I think a lot of people have spoken out against what Mr. Trump has done, and maybe it's my warning training as an intelligence professional. I have seen the lights blinking red in terms of what Mr. Trump has done and is doing and is bringing this country down on the global stage, and he's feeding divisiveness within our country. He continually lies to the American people, and the types of things that he's doing, I think I need to speak out. And so I've been speaking out rather forcefully because I believe it's important to do so. I don't believe I'm being political at all. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. And many members of the Congress over the years who have security clearances have spoken out rather forcefully against whoever was in the Oval Office if they weren't from the same political party. So now as a private citizen, they're telling me that I shouldn't do that. I'm sorry.
No, actually, they're not telling you that at all. You're not a Republican. You're not a Democrat. You're a Gus Hall voter, I know. And they're not telling you that at all, which is a lie, John Brennan. So we already know. You've already established yourself as a liar throughout your career at CIA. Yeah, we've already established that he's a liar. Repeated lying to the American people, to Congress about hacking into Senate Intel Committee computers, about the drone program, about enhanced interrogation post 9/11.
How about lying about telling the survivors of Benghazi that no, I did not have them sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Yes,
no, he said to Congress, no.
Right.
He did.
And
liar.
And he's lying again. And the lie is that anybody's trying to silence him. Who said that you're not allowed to go on CNN or MSNBC? Who said you're not allowed to access the New York Times editorial pages? The idea that a guy is complaining about being silenced while on Meet the Press is an irony that is completely lost on the left. And I just go back to say the wave that should be coming with a sort of polarizing a figure as Trump, despite the relative health of the economy, is being undermined or being tamped down, that wave, by John Brennan and Michelle Goldberg and others like them that are unserious people. And I don't care what their previous title was. I don't care how many years they served in various capacities in the government. I look at your conduct, and the conduct is delegitimizing and disqualifying, which is why you see, and who's listening, really? I mean, we have to analyze this, I suppose. I don't even know if we do anymore, because I don't know if anybody actually cares what John Brennan has to say other than the dyed-in-the-wool partisans. The news out over the weekend, NAACP, Rasmussen, 21% to 36% of African-American families approve of the president's job performance. Now, that's still a distinct minority of that minority population. But, I mean, he got 8% of the vote in 2016. If you're talking about blacks turning out to vote Republican in double digits, even low double digits.
Like 10.
It's
over. Because you need black people, what Stephanie Trussell always calls it, the donkey plantation. And one point here, nowhere does Chuck Todd, here's where the media stepped in it.
Chuck Todd.
Okay, I know. Plus, you know what? The Caesar haircut, dude, just, you know, admit you're bald. But the Chuck Todd thing, where he doesn't question, even push back, let him say what he wants to say. Okay? It's an interview. But you have to say at one point, didn't you lie to Congress A, B, and C? Didn't you? And what about Richard Burr's statement, sir, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, that you didn't bring any of this to the committee? So either you're lying then or lying now. Where's that kind of pushback? A little bit of journalistic, what is it called? Impartiality? A little...
Either institutional knowledge, you're either completely ignorant or you're in the tank, right? So it's
he
not
knows.
Institutional knowledge. It's an unwillingness to challenge the credibility of the witness on the stand,
because,
so to speak.
Why? You're using this boob with his, you know, demanding his security clearance. You're using him as a tool to bash the political party that you hate.
And
people know that.
And, oh, by the way, this guy is, you know, creating a blast zone around him, is John Brennan. Because even clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off, Jim Clapper was running from him over the weekend with Jake Tapper. He wants his security clearance.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J this morning, and we're talking about the overheated and unhinged rhetoric of the left.
Why I hate them. Really, basically.
In advance of the midterms.
Really, it's like, I don't like, look, I'm not a Trump fan, but this constant, the thing about Todd with Brennan, and not reminding his listeners why Brennan lied to Congress, et cetera, or what Richard Burr said. By not saying that, I get ill physically because I see my business, journalism, going down the tubes.
Well, you know what you're saying is you want a little R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time you get a black woman and a beagle confused, remember this, I got you.
That was his message to Trump over the Omarosa matter. Sing it with me, John.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Find
out what it means to me.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Hey, you know, it's better than what he said about the Greeks.
What did he say about the Greeks?
I sent it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tell us.
He said something about African kings being doing philosophy and architecture and everything. And before all those, when those Greek homos were in the cave.
Oh, that's Sharpton.
Hiding in caves. This is Mr. Tolerance.
Huh? Does that fit with
any race riots you could start in New York where people get stabbed? Al?
Or Jesse? What does Jesse call New York? Now, does that fit within the confines of MSNBC's hate speech protocols?
I don't know. What would Joy Reid say?
Oh, gosh. Let's ask her. Katie Torr, Nicole Wallace. They're all the same. Mary at Midway.
Oh, hello there. You know what? I really don't even follow politics, but nowadays, I mean, this is going to come out wrong, but all the entertainment shows are pretty much over. But for what's left, I like to listen to your show. So now I'm following politics. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Hello?
Yes.
And I watched Chappaquiddick, and I thought,
like,
how is it that, I mean, we all knew that I'm the S word, not 70, 60, but I do remember that incident. It was bad enough. When you watch that movie and you realize, his very people told him, you have to go back. We're going to take care of damage control. Report what happened. They find him the next day on a slab like, no, I chose not to go back. She died of asphyxiation. We all know that now. He could have saved her life. My point, I could go on and on, but my point is to think Nancy Pelosi and so many others, what a great man he was. He was the lion of the Senate.
Yeah.
When somebody
there.
Dies, but they were even gushing about how great he was even before then. And they're going to say bad things about Trump, like he's a Hitler and so on, when somebody who actively, well, is responsible for killing someone was negligent to the extreme about it, and then decided, I'm going to keep running instead of hiding his head like the rest of us would.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mary. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity. Right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan. And in for Amy J. this morning is venerated Chicago Tribune columnist John Cass.
As opposed to worship, because veneration is different from worship.
Yes.
For those of us Christians who understand.
We honor.
Icons.
Yes, we honor. Boy, this topic keeps coming back this morning. We were talking to Doug Weed, a presidential historian, about shadow banning and just outright banning of conservatives and conservative content by the big social media outfits. And our next guest has also been targeted for elimination, like our friend Dennis and colleague Dennis Prager. Bridget Gabriel is a New York Times bestselling author and terrorism expert. She has a new book out called Rise. Rise, in defense of Judeo-Christian values and freedom. She was banned by Facebook by posting about the raid on that New Mexico compound where you had Islamists training children to be school shooters. Not making this up. We've stories just say one of the women in the compound had overstayed her visa for 20 years. Thinking about national security issues like immigration policy. She's banned on Facebook, Brigitte Gabriel, for posting this about one of those arrested in that raid. This is the smile of a sick and depraved Muslim terrorist who is back on the streets on bail after training children to shoot up schools. The judge who allowed this to happen should be removed from their post ASAP. If he harms anyone while on bail, the blood is on their hands. Yeah. And that got her banned from Facebook. Those pesky algorithms and conservative content checkers employed by Mark Zuckerberg. For more on her social media travails, as well as the underlying substance of her book. We're pleased to be joined now by Brigitte Gabriel. Brigitte, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and John. I'm delighted to be with you this morning.
So now Facebook has designated you apparently the same way that the Southern Poverty Law Center has, which is a hate group because you're opposed to Islamist terrorism. So that relationship and that feedback you're getting as a person of Lebanese descent who is talking about the values undergirding this country as compared to the Islamist fundamentalists.
Well, exactly. I mean, and the post that I posted on Facebook was basically showing a picture of the smile, the smirk on the face of this terrorist, basically laughing, walking out of the courtroom. This is the gentleman I shouldn't even call him a gentleman. He's a terrorist who was training children to shoot up schools. And we got to the point in our country, Dan and John, that we cannot call a terrorist, even though he has been already arrested for the crime and out on bail. So this is the state of affair we are in, and this is exactly why I wrote the book Rise. It's a rallying cry for Americans who love our country, who care about our country, who are seeing the deterioration of our country and the destruction of our country from within, to rise up and speak up while we still can exercise our freedom of speech, while at least we can still talk to our elected officials and say, we need laws to protect the equality and expression between conservatives and libertarians and Democrats. What made America great is our ability to come together and discuss ideas and debate ideas. And out of that debate, we came up with what was best for our country, what was best for our children. Today, that is being eroded and silenced, and freedom of speech is one of our most fundamental pillars. And so this is why I wrote the book. And by the way, in each chapter of the book, I not only discuss the problem, for example, when I talk about freedom of speech and what's happening in the country, but we give people talking points and actions as to what they can do to make a difference. For example, we introduced the Free Speech Defense Act, and we have already passed that bill in 11 states, and we are now talking to members of Congress to introduce it on the federal level. We teach people where to go, how to go, what numbers to call, the name of the bill, and how they can be engaged.
Do you want the federal government to be involved in regulating social media?
We, right now, what we are dealing with is basically a monopoly by the four top major social media giants like Google, Twitter, Facebook. The American public right now is no longer getting the news from the three television news network the way it used to be 40 years ago. They're not even getting it from cable news. Where they're getting it from is on their iPhones and iPads, and they're getting it through their social media, especially the millennium, especially people under 40. And this is why we must ensure that voices like ours, Christian voices, religious voices, freedom voices, journalism voices, authors, pundits, writers, will be able to express their opinion without being shadow banned by Twitter, without being put in Facebook jail, you know, banned for 24 hours as punishment for posting something like what Facebook did to me. We need to ensure that freedom of speech is protected as much as our founding fathers worked so hard to give us the liberties that we have. We must ensure that those liberties are passed to our future generations.
But freedom of speech is with respect to restraint on government. So when it comes to a college campus or a social media communication channel, isn't that different?
Can you repeat the question?
So freedom of speech, you're talking about our First Amendment freedom of speech rights. That is a restraint on government. So when we're talking about private social media giants and their communication channels, or we're talking about college campuses, unless they're taxpayer funded, that creates a bit of a complication. It's a different thing restraining a private entity than it is restraining government with respect to freedom of expression.
Well, we do not want to restrain them. We want to make sure they are fair. If they are right now, no new business outfit can compete with Facebook. We have talked to a lot of startup companies on the national level who are trying to build something like Facebook, but you can't even start because they are the mega worldwide. So I even talked with conservatives who want to launch, and I asked them, you know, we have been approached by different people who are starting on the conservative side to start the equivalent of Facebook, you know, as a free enterprise. And they said to us, not only we will not be able, it will be such limited exposure talking in an echo chamber if we go with them, but how else the masses are going to be exposed to our voices? Because Facebook is where the masses are. Twitter is where the masses are. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that there is transparency and there is equality in the treatment of voices. If they're going to be that much of a giant, that we will make sure that there is fairness. We're not telling them what to do. We're telling them that if they're going to have that big of a wider and control over social media, they need to be fair and basically letting all voices be expressed.
In your book, Rise, the issue of connecting the dots for people. So going back to this raid on this New Mexico Islamist training compound teaching children to be school shooters. I mean, incredibly, it's really not gotten the coverage it demands. But the connecting the dots from the principals of that terrorist cell to even some organizers of high-profile women's marches who've otherwise been celebrated in the Eastern establishment press, like Linda Sarsour.
Exactly. And right now we are seeing our enemies, the enemies of America, come together and work together and network together to basically destroy the America that we know right now as it was founded in the image of our founding fathers. So what we're seeing is far left groups are regularly working with Islamic organizations such as CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, or ISNA, Islamic Society of North America, and others, to prevent almost every common sense, intelligence, and security measure that will secure the country from terrorist attacks and taking hold. So they have been colluding together, working together. For example, the left right now is also funding Islamic organizations like CARE. They are funding personalities like Linda Sarsour. In an interview with Linda Sarsour by Glamour magazine, she was bragging about how organizations like Planned Parenthood, the SPLC, CARE, MoveOn.org have stepped up to help fund the work that she is doing, basically also help fund the Women's March. So this is how we are seeing them come together. For example, we know that de Blasio and wiped out basically and stopped the NYPD surveillance program of certain New York mosques that were linked to terrorism. Well, we know terrorists have come out of those mosques.
So how important are individuals like Zudi Jasser, who's the founder of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy in this country, served our country in the Navy as lieutenant commander, those moderate voices who are thoughtful, have the leadership qualities, build organizations like he's built. Do we need to do a better job of amplifying individuals like Dr. Jasser?
Oh, Jasser is amazing, and there are a few others like him who are speaking out and putting their neck on the line to speak out. These are the people who deserve the funding from the ACLU, from Planned Parenthood, from these people. These are the true moderate voices who are pro-America, who are speaking out, but they're not getting any traction. What's happening right now is the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and this is exactly why we're seeing organizations like the ACLU and Planned Parenthood and the SPLC come together and work with terrorist-designated organizations like CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and the co-conspirators like ISNA and MPAC and these type of organizations. So this is where we are right now. Organizations like ours, Dan and John, work with the likes of Zuhdi Jasser, work with the likes of Tawfiq Hamid, many of the moderates, Islamic moderates who are speaking out, but organizations like ours do not have the funding and the deep pockets like the SPLC, who's got hundreds of millions of dollars in its bank accounts offshore.
She is Brigitte Gabriel. She's the chairman of Act for America. Her new book, she's a New York Times bestseller, her new book, easy for me to say, Rise, in Defense of Judeo-Christian Values and Freedom. Brigitte, thanks for joining us. Good luck with your book.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
And she joined us on the Turnkey.pro Answer Line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and John Cass in for Amy J this morning. It's been fun, almost as much fun as going to the Sox game on Saturday night, where the 18 fans in attendance were treated to Marian Catholic sister Mary Jo Sobiech throwing out the first pitch.
This is Sister Mary Jo, who is going to throw out the first pitch, but with a little added extra. Look at this thing. A pretty good job of it. Throws it in the zone.
I asked her, how hard can you throw a baseball? And she purposely took something off it on the pitch there because she wanted to show her impressive movement. And she said she's been to like a county fair or an amusement park where they have that game where you can throw the baseball and it'll tell you how hard you throw it and you try to match it. She said she threw the ball. Ready for this?
Yeah.
76 miles per hour.
I mean,
sweet.
And you had to see the first pitch. I mean, because you saw what she did, right?
Yeah. Filthy.
Bounced it off her bicep and then threw this yellow hammer.
Pop it up in the air. And beautiful.
I mean, the great pantheon of Marian Catholic athletes. You got your Rodney Harrison. You got your John Holasek. You got your Tyler Ulis. Now you have your sister Mary Jo Sobiech.
I got to Google Tyler Ulis.
He was the point guard for the Phoenix Suns.
Oh,
played
okay.
At Kentucky.
Sorry, haven't been watching basketball lately. Ever since P.J. Carlissimo got choked.
That's been a spell then.
Yeah, it's been a spell.
Okay.
You choke your coach and you let it go. Listen to the Chicago Way podcast. We're dropping it this afternoon. I asked the question, will Ron pull the plug on his reelection?
I hope at least he'll pull the plug on his dancing with unsuspecting Chicago residents.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.